Did I do that?
No, it was a dog. Yeah. A dog over there.
Welcome back. We got a great show coming. Got a apology tour coming.
Yeah, we've got some fun stuff today. This is episode 25 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. This is Kelly Gallup. If you guys are this far in, you probably know that already. We've kind of done a lot since we last filmed a podcast.
Tons.
Yeah, a couple Lots episodes with Howard where we were fishing. We went out to a secret river.
Yeah. How do anybody knows about that one?
Nobody knows about that. That was a fun trip. My head still hurts a little bit, but I'm getting better.
Yes.
So we're going to start off today with a special early episode edition of What's Kelly Pissed Off About? Kelly?
I'm pissed off that that was the last one, right? The podcast?
Yeah, that's the last one that went
Everybody roasted me for talking about it. I'm pissed off because I did. I talked insatiably.
So to set the stage.
I had Howard with us.
Yeah.
We just shot the show with. And one guy wrote in and says, what an asshole I am because I had 90 minutes and 5 minutes for Howard. First thing you have to understand is you got to beg Howard to answer anything. He just doesn't talk. But, you know, this may be hard for you to believe, but everybody has, you know, I was starstruck. I mean, the guys, I couldn't quit shutting my mouth. I was like, I wanted answers too, but I did talk over him a lot. I didn't talk over him. He just doesn't talk.
Yeah.
You know, he just.
Well, and he said, like he said in his comment, you know, he'd just gotten off a plane, was jet lagged.
Right.
He said he was starstruck. And I think
what
you guys didn't see in that episode is I cut it right at the beginning. You know, we do our little intro, and then all three of us went silent for like a good 10 seconds. And Kelly goes, awkward silence, awkward silence. And then we kind of got into it. So, you know, it's weird to jump into a podcast with somebody you don't know at all.
Well, and then it was impromptu. We didn't really know we were going to.
Yeah.
That was kind of, we were planning on going fishing. So, and doing a short little thing, but then you know, it was too good of an opportunity. But I heard your cries. Because I had a million things I wanted to ask him too, but we hadn't fished yet. And then once we fished together, it's a little different. So, but anyway, we're having Howard back, and I asked everybody to send questions because he's a world champ. I mean, the guy's world champion caster, fisher, you name it. The guy's incredible. And so we're going to announce a bunch of stuff on the next one we do when he's here, including a possible stuff that we're doing together. But apologize for that. I mean, I got it that when I watched it too, I wanted to hear more of Howard, and I've heard me a lot. But yeah, I was kind of pissed when I read it. First, I was like, well, screw you guys. And then I was like, shit, you're right. But I'm not a very good interviewer, so.
No, I mean, when we were
talking, my deal.
We talked about doing this podcast for a long time before we started it.
8 years.
Yeah, and the entire time. You know, Kelly's like, what are we going to talk about? You know, I'm like, well, I think we're going to ask one question and roll for an hour. I think we can make it work. And then, well, are we going to interview people? Well, probably not that much. I mean,
no.
So we'll iron that out and figure it out. Our sound equipment's not great for that either. So I apologize for a little bit of an echo.
I heard that and I didn't hear it. And it was like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I said, fix it. And I could hear it in half of it, but not the other half.
Yeah, so the behind the scenes part is that we've got two different mic packs going to two different cameras, and I have to sync them up. And most of the time I can get them where you hear none of it, but every once in a while one starts like a half frame before the other, so there's a tiny echo. So in those parts I'd go in and completely cut my mic until I said something, and then I'd introduce it again real quick. So most of the time it's pretty clean until we start going back and forth real quick. Then you get a little echo. So we're working on that. Maybe we'll get real podcast equipment eventually.
They don't pay me for that.
Yeah, maybe not. Just deal with it. I'm in the squeaky chair today. You can deal with that too. I'll try to sit still.
I don't sit still.
You
don't. I just did the longest 5 seconds in history.
That was pretty good.
I want to touch something.
I was watching the one where, I think it was two podcasts ago, where you're like, I'm going to sit still today. I'm taking this out. I'm not going to have anything in front of me so I can't fidget. And immediately you just start grabbing shit from anywhere else.
So I start doing this and then start fixing my odd guns. My buddy Billy Robinson always, for those of you who don't know, I have an adult autistic son, and my ex-wife Penny would always say to me, because Billy Robinson was always doing it when we were in school. he would move like, I don't like things sitting crooked, right? And I don't really know I'm doing it. And Billy would sit at, when we were in the cafeteria, and he'd look at me and he'd move one of my things, right? But I'm not really looking at the foot. And all of a sudden I'd go like this. And he goes, see, I told you. He's a freak. He's a freak. I'm like, what a dick. Why did you do that?
Well, so I remember you doing that to Matt when we first showed up.
Yeah, moving his shit.
Yeah, yeah. All the books on the front table, he's always aligning them. And Kelly
yeah, I had
go,
that same thing. That's why I can't stand this tool up. Rack thing over here. It's like chaos. I was guiding a guy one time, and he's going down the river, and we're on the Manistee. We're just above Guitar Jack's place, and it was just a bunch of deadfall. We had a windstorm or something. Shit's everywhere. Trees are all over the place. But it's a jack pine forest, and, you know, and a lot of hardwoods around it. And the guy's looking at it, he almost starts shaking. He goes, oh, I just can't. That drives me crazy. I said, what? Looking up in the woods, like, I thought maybe there's somebody's trailer or something back there. He goes, that chaos. If I owned that lot, I'd have to clear cut it. Like, well, I'm not that bad. It is a forest, mister. Yeah. But yeah, there was, I've always been that guy.
Oh, so we got a dog laying on the tripod. Let me make sure nothing moved. Dudley?
He didn't move.
No, he rocked the camera. Let's see.
He should be tired. I took him on Mel and I went on a long walk.
Dudley, if but you could move just flush. A little, buddy.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
Dudley did get the only two birds up.
Not that expensive bird dog?
He was not far behind, but Dudley went in hot real and got the two huns.
All right, well, we'll throw the dog interruption up in front of that. But all right, well, we did what's Kelly pissed off about, and let's jump into some other questions. So this comment comes from No Photo Mojo on YouTube. He says, Kelly Gallup, you made up a new word in that last podcast.
What a surprise.
What the hell does dissimilate mean? Did you mean disseminate? Gotta bust your chops. Talk all you want.
Yes.
Talk all you want. Make up more new words. I still won't stop watching, listening. Look forward to Tuesdays. So, No Photo Mojo. You're wrong. I Googled it. Dissimilate's a real word.
But and whatever it is.
You used it in context. It
was, I thought I did, but if he said I didn't, I did great. I'll fix it.
So,
I have a brother who's rather intelligent. He's a doc, and he's got some 170-something IQ. And I did a church thing with him once, and he was running this men's group. And he's, you know, and then, I mean, I've got two brothers who are super smart. I come along, it's like watching twins when the doctor says to Danny and Arnold, and he says to Arnold, oh, you got everything that is perfect and wonderful. Looks at Danny, he goes, you got all the crap. Well, that was me. Both my older brothers super smart. But I'm sitting there, and the first time in my life, I look, I'm a terrible, I never read. I think that's why. I didn't read a book until I was 50. Now I'm like insatiable. I've read hundreds and hundreds. It's all I do. But I think that's why I was a shitty speller. But I was smart enough sitting there, and I'm looking up, and my brother's got the chalk, the whiteboard, and he's writing all over, and I go, He looks at me, and he's like, what? I said, you spelled Christian wrong. It's the highlight of my life.
That's great.
That's the only time I absolutely knew it was right. All these stupid rules, I before E, except after C. All that bullshit, except for 100 times, right? Drive a person crazy. But you're right. If I'd said it wrong, go ahead, correct me.
No, I think you were right. I don't know.
I think it is.
Agree to disagree. We'll see. Okay, so now
by the way, I love when you guys roast me. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's good fun. All the guys in the shop, we love it too. I mean, they're fun.
Did I tell you the Musky Fool guys got back to me?
No.
Oh, really cool. Bam Bam. Remember I said there's a guy with the two first?
Yeah,
I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, we're going to go back and we might go back and do a show with them.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, but I'm going to do their podcast.
Nice.
And I'm going to roast flies with them and shit.
Nice.
That'll be a blast. Yeah. These guys are cool. If you guys haven't watched it.
Did you see some guy with the name Feather Flicker Media comment on the YouTube channel saying that the Musky Fool guys owe you whatever, a bunch of money for mentioning them, and their views on their podcast doubled or something.
I hope it doubled them.
Yeah. No, they seem like cool dudes.
He's got a feather flicker. That's his thing?
No, that's Chris.
Oh.
Yeah, it's Chris who commented that. But, okay. Yeah.
Because that was that guy in, what's his name, Shep or something like that, when I did that round table with the seven Bass Pros and me. And they would, and this was like 20 years ago, and he'd go around the room and they're all, because he knew that somehow that a lot of what I did was off bass. Somewhere he'd heard me or read it. That, and so they brought us, it was for the ISC show. And every time they'd ask me a question, he'd go, "What do you think, feather flicker?" I should have made a flash for it. But yeah, Shemp or Shep or something. It was in San Diego.
All right, so let's do another question. This is from WayWay872 on YouTube. Which, by the way, guys, leave your comments, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Buy stuff from our online store. How about tell a friend? I don't think I've done that one yet. Go tell somebody who likes fishing about our podcast. Views and stuff really help us do this. So this question comes from WayWay872. He says, "Kelly, please make a vid on knots. There's so much clickbait about which is strongest, but would also love to hear your opinion on what knots to use, when and where." And then Mike Lewis followed up saying, "Would love to see this from him. I've noticed in some videos he briefly mentions knots on occasion, and they seem unconventional. It'd be cool to see him actually show them and explain." And we have a dog sleeping on the tripod again.
He's done. He just moved. I saw it rattle there.
Yeah, he's laying on it. Dudley, would you kindly move your Dudley, ass?
Come here.
Thanks, buddy.
Come on. Get over here. Yeah, good job.
All right. Now we're good. All right. So you heard the question. It's about knots. What knots do you like? When do you use them and why?
Well, to be clear, and I've said it a lot of times on other things, I don't believe in that whole knot strength stuff, period. I've watched dozens of these guys saying this knot, that knot. And I'll just give you, and for you knot freaks, you just knock yourself out here. You just write in and tell me how wrong I am. I use about 5 knots, and I don't believe in knot strength. I do. There's a couple that I think an improved clinch, I think, is weaker than a clinch, mostly because if you look at the dynamics of tying a knot, you never pull the tag. And people have a tendency with an improved clinch to go through the loop and pull the tag and start the knot at the top instead of from the bottom. And then you'll see, and I've said it many, many times in lots of videos, if you ever see yourself or someone pushing their knot with their thumbnail, they didn't do it right. The knot, you lubricate it, you spit on it, and it comes down, and you let the knot form. And people almost always, I see them pushing on the improved. And I never saw it stronger. But this whole thing about knot strength and pulling it like to in the machines on the weight, I never really, and it's kind of an arrogant state, I don't believe I've ever had a knot break in my life that was tied right. Yeah. I've had a couple give when I was, and never on a giant fish or something like that. It was like, I'm in a hurry and I'm like, or my hands are cold. I go, boom, I'm just like, go. And then I come back and lose a fish or lose it on something. But I really don't believe that if you do a knot right, if you properly tie it, it's not the knot that broke. It was you pointing your rod at the fish. Yeah. I mean, I really don't care. I've done it trying to make a point where I did 2 granny knots and land lots of fish. And I really don't believe it, in particular in the heavier pounds. And I think when you get down into the 5X and that kind of stuff, that light line, it's that much more imperative that you tie your knot properly.
You can get away with a lot on 12-pound maximum.
Yeah, you
can. You tie a shitty knot, and it'll hold of the time.
You can just wrap it around and finally stick it through something. Yeah. It'll hold. It's 12-pound. Yeah. Your rod won't hold 12 pounds if you didn't know. And, I mean, most people when they're fighting fish, they point their rod, and it goes down, and they just snap it. It's their fault. It's almost impossible to tell somebody that they did it because they, in the heat of the moment, they think they're here, and the fish goes like that, and the rod goes down for a millisecond. You know, and it's like
you lose all your shock absorption in the rod, all your slack.
Cinched up. I mean, I watched it thousands of times, particularly steelhead and salmon. It's how, because the rod moves so big on them, right? And they usually have too much drag, and that's what thumbs their rod like this, and they get it one, and they're down, and they break, and it's very quickly. But I don't remember the last time I broke a fish off, and so. But anyway, I'll just tell you that the basic knots that I use. I mean, first and foremost, I think you should be able to do an Albright or a nail knot. You know, nail knot, But in today's world, almost everybody runs loops on their lines. And so you really don't need to know how to do that, given you want to do it.
So I think the only caveat there, like I was talking to Jake about this the other day, and he said, you know, after needing to do a nail knot a couple of times and not having one, he said, mm-hmm. I finally became a man and put a nail knot tool on my lanyard.
Yeah.
Because when you need it, essentially when you need it, like I needed one up in Alaska last year. I broke off, I hooked some kind of metal in the river I was in, and I broke off the loop on the end of my fly line. Mm-hmm. That's when you need a nail knot. And when you need one, you can do a nail knot.
And I, you know, by the way, I don't think there's a knot in the world you shouldn't be able to tie in less than 20 seconds.
No.
I mean, you should, if you don't, if you can't, because that, it's imperative while you're fishing that you're not aggravated by tying a knot. You watch people freak out because they lose their shit. I went up and where we film with Howard, I went up the other day, a couple of days ago, and just, it was on fire. I mean, it was, you can't have better fishing than that. Every other cast, you know, every third, maybe you get a fish on. But I was getting a ton of these, you know, 8 to 12 inch 2-year-olds. And they're the ones that do that psych. And I was drop shot.
Yeah.
I did 3 complete rigs where the thing just went crazy. I was trying to hold them right out of the water. I just couldn't get them out quick. And that it just
wraps up on you.
And it looked like you put it in a drill. I'm like, right? And I just went right up to my 3X, cut it off. Whole new rig, right? So I've got a blood knot coming down. I've got another blood knot for my stopper. I got a perfection loop going to that one. I go down to my next one. I got my fly. I got another one. I got tied around that line to go back to drop my drop shot. Done. 2.5 minutes. 2 minutes maybe. I'm done. I'm back fishing. But it can't bother you, especially if you're going to do that style of fishing. You have to have confidence. And even if you're just like, I've heard a lot of people tell me, I said, I just didn't want to change. It takes me too long to tie a knot. Oh my God. If you can't,
you better go practice.
You need to practice. The first time, my first knee I blew out, I did a, I was elevated, right? I had a reconstruction on it. I burned a 10,000 spool yards. I bought these super cheap things at the tackle shop, just enormous thing of 10 pound. And all I did is sit there. I'd already been guiding 20 years.
Right.
You know, I just did a practice. But anyway, you need to know a nail, and you should be able to do a nail knot with a pair of hemos. It's so really not that hard.
Let's clarify real quick, too. We're talking trout world. We're not talking saltwater.
Well, if I was in saltwater, I'm an Albright guy.
But then you get into Bimini. You get into your Biminis. You get into much more complicated knots. And saltwater guys are going to call us out on that.
I don't know very many guys who run Biminis for much in the salt. I mean, surely you're not going to do that for anything. Maybe tarpon, but I mean, the sailfish, all the billfish, all that stuff, the big water, they all do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I'm going out on a freaking big water boat, I sure as shit hope somebody's tying
somebody
I'm
else
not paying
else
to be
not
out there to show up and do it.
No, I
love it. Biminis are a fun, it's a fun knot, but it's
really, no, I mean, if you're going on a big game, you should know how to tie these knots already or find someone else that's
well, the guide better know. But anyway, but I really think it's important. An Albright's another really useful knot, but I don't do them that often. But it's useful. It's easy to learn to tie. But you should know how to do a nail knot. I like the tool. I like that little Fly-Rite tool, I think it is. Can't remember what it's called. It's been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, you put your knot on it, run your fly line, pull it off, and it's done. I mean, you can do one in 10 seconds.
I think another good one to know is if you don't have the tool is how to do that with folding your fly line over.
And that's an Albright. When you do an Albright that way.
But then you end up pulling the line out. So it's like, it's a nail knot, but that's called an Albright when you do it that
way.
But
you should also do it when you take a pair of hemos, clip the tip of your fly line and don't smash it tight.
Right.
You can still do the same thing, put it through the groove of the, you know, of the hemos, and you can still do one really easily. And so, and then I'm going to list, the knots that I kept seeing those. I knew we were going to do this. We're going to, because it's important. And so that one's just fixing your leader to your fly line. And so next, the most basic knot, which I use almost always, is a Davy knot.
Yep.
And I saw George Anderson did a thing on it once. I saw another guy do it. I can't remember who the other guy was. Said it was the weakest knot ever. I've caught tarpon, bonefish, barracuda, pike, muskie, every trout on the planet, I've used a Davy knot. I have never had one fail in my life. I don't care. And call me out. Tell me whatever you want. If you tie your knots right, you will. They just don't break.
So I remember showing up here, and you and I were doing knot tying competitions up there, and you asked me what I use, you know, to nymphs and streamers and stuff, and I said, well, a lot of the time I do a double Davy. You said, what the fuck's a double Davy?
Yeah.
You mean a Davy? And I'm like, I was essentially doing the improved clinch version of a Davy, which then I changed. And you don't need it. No. That extra loop through a lot of the time doesn't allow it to sit properly.
That's
right?
When it clinches at the top of your knot.
Yeah.
And it's just, it didn't need improvement. Davy's what I use, but for.
So what do you use the Davy for?
Anything where I don't have a non-slip loop knot. Yeah. So the two I use most. And I have no problem with the clinch knot, right? I don't. I did it most of my life. And then Davy showed me his knot and the Davy knot. And then I never went back because I can tie one and probably, we could try it right here if I can get it through that. If I have my glasses on, it's a second fly for me, second and a half.
Yeah.
It's through and done, you know.
The other thing I like about it.
Anytime on the videos watching fishing, if I use this on a, I don't use loops. I use loops always on my streamers. Once I've identified, I'm fishing that, right? Mm-hmm. But I always tie Davy knots when we're going through on streamer wise and I'm changing flies very quickly. I'm always on a Davy. Once I'm kind of on it, or if I got, I almost always do it. And then I go to a non-slip loop.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, the Rapala knot, whatever it is one you like, but learn it. But you don't need to know many. So, in essence, I'm going to know a nail knot, a Davy knot, a loop knot, and a perfection loop. And so.
And a blood knot.
And a blood knot.
Or a surgeon's knot.
Double surgeons or a blood. And again, they're the five of the most basic knots on the planet, right? Yeah. But I personally, nail knot. So that's a foregone thing. You somehow got to get your leader to your fly line, right? Yeah. But I frequently use perfection loops and because I'll leave those loops on, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
If I am more techie dry stuff when I'm not just, you know, I like to go through the fly line and, you know, do it that way. But so there's no knot at the end of it. And so that's my only bitch about the loops is it getting them through the fly, you know, through the tip top.
Right.
And so that's kind of a pain. But so for the most part, I use a Davy. So I want to know how to do a Davy. And a loop, whichever one it is. And that's, but I only use those for streamers. I don't use, like Andy Sabota always used a turtle or a loop for his dry flies also. I'm not taking that.
I will sometimes like big foam, sand flies, hoppers and stuff. And then I think the other.
Lose a loop?
Yeah.
Yeah, fine.
Especially, I mean, if I'm fishing like 8 pound maxima to them for sure.
I've used loops on the dries too. And Andy was doing
the big
it,
stuff, but.
Even little stuff.
And then the other one I do is like balanced leeches or something. Mm-hmm. So the theory there is that a loop knot, it's not secured to the eye of the hook, so it allows the fly to move a little bit. I think when you're throwing giant streamers and animating them quickly, I don't think it lends any more movement.
I never believed in the animation, and I've said it in a lot of videos, that, you know, if you go back and you look at it, they're... And I've said it in several where I said, if you want to, it's kind of a running joke for me. Get naked in your neighbor's pool and have somebody throw flies at
get
you.
Get drunk, get naked
in
the neighbor's pool.
And then have
pool.
Somebody throw a fly at you and see how much, if you get in the water, you'll see that physics just don't allow, I think it came from Dave Whitlock animating his flies in because he would illustrate them right in magazines and he would show how the loop would make the fly do this. Well, the loop has it's bending right when you actually see it in the water. None of that happens. The only way it could possibly happen is if it sunk this way.
Yeah.
Right. So if your ass sunk down and your loop stayed here, but you don't really, in particular on a streamer, but the one place I could see, we're like on a jig, especially verticals, where it's hang your loop, you're hanging up and it's static and it's hanging there. It's conceivable it does a little bit more, but I don't know. It's still hanging.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a material difference to the fish.
When I came out with the bead butt hairs here, way back when, that was the first time I got in and started studying flies. Mm-hmm. The bead butt hairs here, I did that fly with Umpqua probably 27 years ago. And I didn't, and there was an article in Fly Fisherman about it too. I sent the guys at Fly Fisherman the fly. Some bitches went out and fished it and lost it and then tied another one and put it in there. It was a piece of shit. And it was, and they did it with a caddis too. Nice. I sent a hex. A hex fly is that long.
Yeah.
Right? A nymph. And I never understood the whole bead head. We were talking about with Howard, mm-hmm. you know, the whole thing about if you've got a bead in the front, your fly is going to sink this way theoretically, but it really doesn't because you're attached to your leader. And if you get in the water and look at the thing, it isn't doing this. It's such a crock. But if you put the bead back here, it's hind in. And what mine was, I gave Howard that fly, but it had a tuft of muskrat. They had the bead and then a tuft of muskrat. So it's all in one line. And when the bead sunk the ass, it jackknifed it. So the tuft of muskrat would flutter up and it would give it a jackknife look, mm-hmm. right? And so those guys lose my fly. And then they tried to retie it. They didn't do it well, but it made the article. They didn't tell me. And then they confessed later. I think that was when Ross was still an associate. He's the editor now. One of those guys did it. And then they did one with a caddis too. It wasn't designed to be a caddis don't jackknife.
Right.
They do wiggle though. They wiggle yeah. a lot when they're sending. But at any rate, that's when I first got into the water and started looking at flies and started doing, originally I did it on the loop, but it made no sense because the fly, it doesn't move up here. It was moving at the, you know, the hind end.
Right.
And so I started looking at the streamers, in particular some of the original sculpin stuff in the river in and out, you know, my fly shops ran Lake Michigan. That's where I did some of it. I couldn't see any, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And so I didn't find it real. But it's, again, it's the knot you're comfortable with. To think that, you know, that knot strength, like it really is going to go full strength. One thing, it's impossible to have them do that, but it's so irrelevant to trout fishing in general. And I mean trophy trout fishing too. I don't, there's somebody right now is on their keyboard just flipping their shit out about, you know, how stupid I am. But I just say that if you've got a nail, a Davy, I wrote them down, a Davy or a clinch, whichever one you like. I like Davies, they're cleaner. A non-slip loop and then a perfection loop. If you can do that, you pretty much can do anything you need.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So let's.
And if you want to go out afterwards and learn 100 knots,
go for it.
Who cares? But if you just want to go fish, I've been fishing successfully and guiding for a long time. And I've used to say, and I don't know a guide that doesn't pretty much have the same four knots. That it might be different than mine.
Yeah.
But they know how to tie the knot really, really well.
And then they test it.
Yeah, well, they lubricate it, you go.
You boom. Pull hard on it. I mean, that's, you know,
I'm not a big fan of jerking on those things, watching people do that.
No, not jerk, but like a solid pull. I mean, pull and make sure, because if your knot's bad, it'll fail.
If you go and you look at it, you will see if that loops are right.
Yeah. You know? I mean, you can really crank on those things.
Don't do that 10 turn thing people used to talk about. Five's plenty. They say 7, 8, I don't know.
Okay, so let's.
But just find it. Pull on that thing, and if you really want to be, if you really want to get a something that you can, like, something that you can wrap around your hand and put your hook through it, so you don't jerk it through your hand. I watch a lot of people do this.
Right.
And just pull that thing and see if you have any pressure.
The loops on your hemos are great.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. It doesn't matter anything, but don't think that's what, like, extra turns doesn't equate to extra strength.
Yes. Yeah. So, and then I think another point, depending on the actual gauge of the tippet I'm using, the number of turns I do changes. on my blood knots is where I'm typically doing that style of knot. And so when I'm doing 20 to 12, I do three turns on my blood knots. And then if I'm doing, you know, whatever, 3X to 4X, I'll do five.
So the thinner the tippet,
the more turns, but you're never doing 10.
I never know if people think that's five on each end or whatever. I really don't. I just, you know.
Yeah.
And whatever it is, it is. Okay. But I have never, that's not true. I have had knots break. And I've had a couple break, but they've always been cold rush. Cold, hands are cold, rain and rushing. It's like, oh shit, I just had a big eat or I just saw something and I got crazy and just went
fast.
I didn't really check.
Yep.
Right? But I never had one like on the fish break.
Right. It's we filmed how many times together? I've never seen Kelly break off a fish. I've seen Kelly break hooks when he hooks rocks and has to
pull a hook on a fish.
Yeah, straighten them out. Yeah.
And something's got to give. I mean, I've had the fly line give.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, just.
Yeah, the loop blows out or whatever.
Something, yeah. It's just, I mean, but you're static now. You're like pulling the boat backwards, right?
Right.
But the, I just really believe if you figure out four knots, three really.
So let's clarify the uses for these knots, right? So nail knot is going to be a fly line to a leader, typically. A blood knot, the other option is...
Or a perfection loop. So a perfection loop just makes a loop, and then you loop to loop your fly.
Yeah, if you're going to loop to loop, yeah.
So you've got your line, your leaders all come with one already in them. But for whatever reason, you want to shorten your bud side, whatever it is, or you want to put a permanent bud on and then add, you know, whatever, however. That's how you do it.
Yeah, perfection. So from a fly line to a leader, you have a nail knot or a perfection loop.
Right.
And then leader to leader, leader to tippet, whatever you do.
I'm a blood knot guy.
I likewise do blood knots. Your other options are double surgeons. Mm-hmm. Some people do triple surgeons. I used to tie that knot, but I failed it at a high rate.
It's same as the clinch overdoing it and the improvement. Yeah. I watched the knot not form well.
Right.
I've never seen a double surgeons ever fail because it was the knot. I mean,
so that's a knot I don't tie well. I used to do it, but I failed it a lot, so I learned the blood knot. My percentage of making a proper knot's way higher on a...
I had to learn the double surgeons when I was in my 40s. So I've been doing blood since I was 10.
Blood knots work 12. Pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just
and for those who don't know, blood knot's literally just two clinch knots together. They just
pretty
do that.
Much, yeah.
I mean,
and so
tying it, there's some hand gymnastics in there, but you'll figure it out.
You figure, and when you get used to it, you'll do really short turns. That's one thing. When you first do it, then on your backside's one that gets everybody. When you lose small turns, it just goes around.
But yeah.
Everybody's got...
We'll do...
And there are so many tutorials on knots. If you look, there are... We're shooting live, so there's people in here if you can hear them. If you listen, if you watch those tutorials, they have them now. They're in 3D.
Yeah, they're incredible.
I mean, there's people who have hands in them now.
Yeah.
There's just, it's...
Well, they've got the you know, line you can actually see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, we could try to do one of those, but there are already so many great ones out there.
And you can't
just
do,
go watch them.
There's no way you can do one better than those guys are doing.
No, they're great.
There'll be 20 for every knot. So you're connecting your fly or your leader to your leader.
Leader to tippet. Yep.
With either a blood or a clinch. I mean, a blood or a double surgeon's. And then to the hook, I'm a Davy knot almost exclusively when I'm doing dry flies, wet flies, nymphs, smaller streamers. When I'm on my bigger flies, I use a non-slip. Usually it's a Rapala knot, I think.
There's a non-slip mono loop's
what I use.
And then Rapala. Yeah. You actually tie yours a little different than I do mine, but guess
mine's
what?
Better.
They both work.
I don't know what I do. But again, when you do the non-slip, when you look at the loop, just make sure it comes out the same line. You'll see when you look at the illustrations.
Yeah.
But I have never had one of those break. Yeah. I don't care. They just don't break. And again, most of the time that's 8 to 12 pound tests and you just aren't going to break that stuff. But if you, whatever it is, get comfortable. We could call Richie Strolis or we could call Chad Johnson or whoever. you know, and say what not to use. They might have a different one, but I guarantee you they've never had it break either.
Right.
It's just not something in the fishing. Once you've fished a while, it's just not, to me, I find it very almost comical that there's so much shit about this. Mm-hmm. Because I can assure you, when I go to the river, the last thing I think about is my knot strength.
Yeah.
I've been
doing
this all my life. If I call Walt Grau, he's going to have one. If I call Russ Madden, he's going to have. But you know what? The last thing on their life is that, oh, my knot's going to break.
Yeah. No, it's.
Ever. No. Never. We don't even. And I've never seen two pros ask each other what knot they use. They don't give a shit. They know how to tie their knots. They don't have a plethora of knots. They've got the same thing everybody does, 3 or 4 or 5, whatever it is. And they're really proficient at them. What you do see with pros is how quickly they tie their knots. And that's the difference.
Done.
When it's rote, when it is just like no different than going, scratching my head, don't have to think about it. When a knot has, you've tied it.
Second nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like anything else. You have to practice. If you're only prep, I bitch about this in fly tying all the time, as I do fishing. Nobody practices fishing, or do they practice fly tying? They go fishing and they tie a fly, but we don't practice just starting our thread, right? Or just this or that. And we don't practice knots. Therefore, it's not rote. It doesn't just come second nature. You don't just go, you sit there and you go, what do you say? 3 turns or 5 turns? What, you know?
Right.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
So you got to practice the damn thing.
So
hopefully you don't
that.
Do it how I did. Don't break your leg and have to sit in a CPM machine for 3 weeks going, hey.
I did it sitting in Zoom meetings, you know, when I was working on just not paying attention and doing knots. And last year, you know, one of my best friends in the world, Jack, who's actually going to be here tonight, but we were out fishing and I like blew up a couple of his blood knots. I'm like, you're not tying them right. You need to figure this out because we don't want to lose the one on it, right? And he goes, he's got a Zoom meeting the next day. Well, he walks into my room and just throws this ball at me. And it was like a 6-foot loop, a daisy chain of blood knots.
Nice.
And he went, yeah, I figured
now
it
out.
Now
you know how to do it.
And you know, it took him an hour.
Yeah.
Chuck, what's a spool of Maxima go for?
6 bones.
No, six bucks? Yeah, 6 bones. Buy a spool of Maxima, slidein.com. Sit in your meeting, listen to the podcast. This is a great time to practice knots. Just tie knots, figure it out so you're comfortable. And I think the biggest part of what you said to me is...
Or go to Kmart and buy the cheapest thing there is.
Yeah, buy literally whatever.
I bought a 10,000-yard spool.
Yeah. I think the most important thing that you said there is when you're comfortable with your knots, then you're not hesitant to change flies when something's not working. Because we hear that all the time. I didn't want to change, you know, it just takes so long to re-rig. Well, that's something you can control. You can't control whether or not the fish eat, but you can control changing your flies and how long it takes you to re-rig.
For those of you that watched the one with Howard, one of the things, I like it. It's kind of like getting in the ring with somebody when you start your posturing, you know, and you're kind of, and when Howard and I went fishing, we were posturing. We were like, checking this, so Howard
kind of looking at each other's
I let Howard go first always, and then I thought, well, if I can catch one fish behind Howard, everything's good.
Set yourself, that's called a win-win. You set yourself up for success there.
But when,
because if he gets them all, then you go
and got 13 fish or whatever it was, I had to come behind him, and confidence was pretty low,
right?
But I'm watching everything Howard does. I'm watching every slide, where he puts his fly. Not necessarily how he put it there, but where he's putting it, where if his drops, where they're going, where his leader is when he's, I'm watching everything he does. And, but then when he tied a knot. Right?
Do you remember me calling it out?
I said, well, I don't know. I just remember saying something like, okay, he can tie one as fast as I can, or almost
fast.
As fast, I think I said.
Well,
it was like, boom, because it wasn't a thought process. He was just like, he had to get heavier. Remember, he's above his fish. And so I came in behind, and he got fish because I'm above those. And he knew it. I mean, it was just, that's a fast-ass run right there. But when he went to that 3.5, he opened his box, picked his fly, cut his fly up, put his fly in, and it was about that much time.
So you remember me asking him if he had a razor blade on his fingernail?
No.
I was like, what, how are you?
Oh, he unties his nose.
How are you cutting your line with your fingernail? He goes, I'm not. I'm just pulling it off.
Yeah.
He's just, so, I mean, he's so fast, right?
Yeah.
Back in.
Your competition.
Turns out a world champion might be pretty good at it.
It's time. Yeah. It's time. It's got to be there.
He's
put his
hours in.
And you can't be sitting there saying, I should try this. I should try this.
Yeah.
You know, from a guy perspective, same thing. I don't feel like changing that. Well, dumbass, that 10 minutes could be two fish. And that's guides work for tips, you know, and rebookings. And a guide that's working their ass off rebooks. You know, you're working for your client. You're not saying, or the guy loses. You need to be in that wood. I need you in that wood right there. No, no, not 2 feet, in the freaking wood. Well, if I lose a fly, we'll put on a new one.
Guess what? I can tie a knot.
Watch this.
I've got a couple more of them. Yeah,
I mean, that's the difference. I mean, having fished with people that are so good all my life, I've been really fortunate to, and then just so many people. And there's just certain things that are redundant as hell. Mm-hmm. And one of them is their efficiency with their tools. They are so, and they're not, is your, you know, your fly and your leader, they're all tools. And there's, you know, everything they do, how they rig their rods, how they get them out of the boat, how they do things. And it's all about efficiency, and that's all practice. And a knot is no different. It's, you know, for whoever's already wrote their shit that, you know, you don't know shit, that this knot's too much stronger, and that's a weak, you are right. You're the greatest in the world. But I will tell you, if you go fish with five pros, you will never hear one talk about a knot. They will just simply tie, and you know what? You won't see their knots fail. They don't.
No.
And we all have different ones, but we know we're comfortable with it, you know? And so there's not a third extra turn or one too short or whatever it is. It's just boom and it goes, and you test it, and you're fishing. It's all, knots, all I got to say about that.
Yeah, knots. Knots are fun, kind of sometimes. And yeah, basically,
and I wouldn't be
whatever
afraid to
works
try
for
new
you.
Ones either. I,
yeah.
Like I said, Andy Sabota, who is this total dork buddy of mine, who worked here our first 2 years, I think, he's just one of those, I like he's an idiot savant. But and he's the most proficient person I've ever known at everything in the world. I don't care what, when as soon as he masters something, he quits. And he's okay, that's boring now. But I bet that guy knew 25 knots that he would just sit here and goes, you ever seen this one? No. And you go, and it'd be like perfect, right? And if you dig that, you dig it. I just, from a functional end of knots, there's only so much they do. And there's only so many ways you're going to use it. So if it's slowing you down, figure it out.
Yeah.
Just practice it.
Practice, practice. I mean, that's what should have been practice. The name of the podcast, just practice. For example, Kyler's practicing washing windows out there right now.
I saw that. He's doing pretty good.
He's doing a pretty good job. I like when he gets the broom up to knock down the spider webs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw him doing that over here.
That's kind of a pro tip. All right. Well, that's, if you guys have comments on that, write in. We always love to hear them. If you think Kelly's an idiot, write in. I
Please.
Especially love to hear those ones. If you think I'm an idiot, keep it to yourself. I don't like those ones so much. All right. Let's go to a new question. This is from... Actually, this is more of a comment from Brian Lane, 9534. He said, here's a suggesting, nice English, Brian. Here's a suggesting, topwater snakes, create a fly that swims like a snake. Big boys, he spelled it like Boise, big boys will eat that.
True story. Kelly? True story. I got a picture. Oh, we can't put it, I'll post it.
Send it to me, I'll turn that out.
We had a, speaking of Andy Sabota, he's the one that did the snake. And the swimmy Jimmy, we lost the snake, but it was no, I think it was 11 inches long. In my back channel, huh? There's one up there, but that,
right?
Yeah, but that was kind of a decoration.
Yeah. I'll take a photo of that.
But I will show you this picture in case you're wondering. That one, that was,
that's a Kill the Corona one, right?
Yeah, I forgot who tied it. It's pretty cool.
Well, it's not a great shot, but. That's better.
The snake,
Kyler too, just cause.
I think that the tan heifer groomer gets eaten for a snake more than anything else. It's like a small snake. But just continue the story about out back. We were out back one day, and I've seen it twice. Both same fish mine, and it was about 7 days, 5, 6, 7 days apart. I've seen this happen twice by the same fish in the back channel about a week apart. And this fish was huge. It was a 25er. And he came in, which is not real common to come in the same spot, but he was there a week apart. And the first time I saw him, I had Andy Sabota, and we saw him out there, and I got him on the other side, and he's going to nymph this fish up because we can pretty much looks like he's nymphing in the pool, which is weird, but there was a lot of bugs. And so Andy gets in position. I'm over in the little pump house, and I'm going to take stills. And so then this comes along. He's sitting there, and all of a sudden this fish just kind of goes and smashes his head down. And I'm like, holy shit, what was that? And then all of a sudden he bolts forward, and he starts rolling. Like if you've ever seen one get hung up in a line where they spin, they're like spinning around in circles like a gator roll.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I know he's all messed up. He's already hooked. And I'm looking upstream for the mono, which I'm assuming somebody broke off a bunch of line, right? And he's twisting. And we're talking about water that's this deep, like 2.5 foot deep maybe, 3 at the max. I don't know how I can't see this at that point because it's really gin clear. And he's rolling. He comes to shore. And he's right on shore and he's rolling. I'm like, holy shit. Because I'm totally convinced that he's hooked a heavy line above in a tree and he's just like rolling. And this freaking snake is this long, comes out of his mouth.
For the folks on the podcast, that's what, 2.5, 3 feet?
Yeah, 3 footer.
Yeah.
It's a 3 footer. And it's a big freaking snake. It's a big water snake, right? And it's rolling. And the snake comes out and it's rolling and he's flopping around, chomping all over the place. And Andy doesn't see any of this. He says, what the hell? And I go, you're never going to believe it. The thing had a snake. Fish in my entire life have never seen this, right? Never in my life have I seen a fish eat a snake. So Gary Anderson's here a week later. He's a kicker in the NFL. He had the most points of anybody for a while. And so Andy's here, and he's a South African guy, very British accent, right? And he comes in, and he's got he's got a fishing show. He's a big fly fishing guy. And I go, let's go look for that fish. Haven't seen him for a while. We go down there, and sure as shit, here he is again. He's sitting in this rock pile probably 4 foot further toward away from us than he was when Andy saw him, and downstream just a little bit. And I've told this in seminars forever because it's just so funny. And this guy comes. So all of a sudden, and we're looking, I go, holy shit, there he is. You see him? Doesn't see him at first, and then all of a sudden you see him. He's big, and he's just really thick. Got, you know, it's a male. He's got that this beautiful, massive head, and just pumpkined up. It's middle of summer. It's July. And he's just beautiful. Just as, you can't make a brown trout prettier than this fish was. And all of a sudden, he just starts, boom, and he comes up, and he smashes his face down into the rocks. And I'm like, oh. The one before, it kind of slammed into it. This time, he's like smashing his head into the rocks. And he comes back up, and he's like, Gary's like, what's he doing? I can't do a British accent, but what's he doing? And
I said, mate.
Mate, what's he doing? And I go, the hell he's doing? Boom, he does it again. Does it 3 freaking times. Bam, bam, bam. What he's doing is he's going in, and he's smashing into the rocks to get dislodged sculpin. Because they go into him, and they'll like ram their head. I've seen them get in weed beds and shake their heads and stuff, but I've never seen one hit rocks. Mm. And then... That's what I assume he's doing, is getting sculpin, because they're rock, you know, the dwellers.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, this snake, if you've never seen a snake, I've seen it a lot since I started watching it, in particular in that back channel. Snakes will come downstream and do the same thing for sculpin. They'll come into rocks and they'll like bump their heads into the rocks and their bodies will just float around behind them and get wrapped around the other rock. They're kind of stable, right?
Yeah.
And they're sitting there and they'll poke. And one of those darting sculpin will pull, boom. And if you see, on this river, if you fish this river a lot, you will see there's a lot of snakes. And you'll see sculpin in their mouths all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, they live on them, basically.
Yeah.
And so this snake is like poking at these sculpin. And we all of a sudden, you know, and the trout's trying to get at the snake now, we think. At first we weren't sure what was happening, but all of a sudden the snake takes off. I mean, the fish goes in and he's biting at the snake. That we can see. This one's not as big. This snake's about 2.5 feet long, but not nearly as big around. That first one was like giant. That snake takes off and starts running for shore. And Gary, from South Africa where snakes kill you, starts jumping. Plus, he's this athlete, a kicker. He's a little guy, but I swear to you, he's like this. He's got his feet. He's like levitating in air. And he's screaming, he's after the snake, mate. He's after the snake. The snake comes wide open and goes up the bank. And this fish and goes up. And I swear to you, dry docks himself and then rolls back in.
Like an orca going after a seal.
Just exactly.
Yeah.
He's just coming and he's just chomping. And Gary, half the time, is trying to do his best Linda thing where he's like, whoo, levitating over the freaking world. And I don't know if he sees it go or not, but he's like, Jesus, he's after the snake, mate. He's after the snake. and he literally goes on shore and then rolls back in. It's kind of a hill, so he didn't have much to roll back, but he goes back into the water. But at this point, Andy's already, because we saw the one before, ties up a snake like this long. Andy's one of the best. He's the guy I've been to the swimming Jimmy. He's just, you just don't get better than this cat, right? And he quit because he mastered it. What a dick. But anyway, he ties his snake up and we went out, we fished that thing a lot. We fished it a lot over those fish because we know those fish are looking for him and just never got one. I'll ask him. I think it was 11 or 13 inches long or something like that. I think it was 7 joints. And when you saw it going on the river, it was very snaky, right?
What rod is he throwing that thing on?
Probably 6 weight. We weren't dedicated.
What was it made out of?
Deer hair. Just like that one.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, exactly. Except looks for like it was all tan, just like the belly of the snake's tan.
Yeah.
He did the top olive. He's probably still got it somewhere, but never got one. But I've always thought that my heifer groomer, which is Andy's the one who put the second flank on that made that fly really good. Mm-hmm. That's it. That I've said it in another video about him, but when I first met him, he walks up and he's a skinny little prick. And he says, you don't know me from Adam. He says, but I sure have made a lot of your flies better. I thought, should I donut face this little prick or what?
And then something. I don't know.
And then I hired him. Yeah. It was at the Chicago show. And so, but he was right. He just had this knack to look at something and go, if you did this, and every time, he's just one of those guys, you know, prick.
So, it reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen that movie Ted, where he's the teddy bear, you know, he's like the raunchy teddy bear.
No.
He goes in, he's trying to get a job at a grocery store. So he goes into the interview and he doesn't really want the job. And the guy goes, so what makes you qualified for this job? And he goes, fuck you. And the guy goes, that takes guts. We need guts. You're hired. And he goes, fuck.
Never saw that.
It also kind of reminds me of, I wasn't here for this, but it made me laugh so hard. Kyler, who's up at the front desk right now, you know, he moves into the trailer. Kelly goes over to work on it, opens it up, and you came back here 8 a.m, and you go, Kyler, your trailer's a fucking mess. And Kyler's carrying the pots for the coffee, and he goes, yep. Just walks away.
He put the coffee down and went to his trailer. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he did end up cleaning it up. But I don't think a lot of people talk to you like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Kyler.
The snakes, for me, the heifer groomer, the tan one, we do it in like white, black, yellow, and tan. And Mickey does it. Mickey
Wooten?
Yeah. I think we talked about it once. He did it, and he put green. He did it two-toned in green on top. Oh, my God, it's so much better.
Really?
Yeah, he's so great.
So he's olive over tan?
No, white over. He did the green and white.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
And yeah. I really think it outfished the pure white one hand down. But he's another one of those guys. Good. But anyway, the tan one, I'm certain that's what they have to be eating for, is a snake, because it's like that right color for their bellies.
Yeah.
And this, oh, by the way, on that story, which I'm going to send this picture, I'm going to show you this picture. Don't let me forget, do not run this without the picture. That fish, to start this, after we saw the snake, right? After we saw
the snake. The big brown trout in the back channel.
Yeah. After we see that, it was November, and I always go, I was going to fish midges, and it was late November, and the midges don't show until like noon, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go dry fly fish. And it's right behind us here. And so I always go down for like 15 minutes and pop a few of them and then leave. And I get there and there's no dries. And so I just immediately, put a larva. But while I was walking down there, I see this snake go by. I see in a one's mouth.
In a fish's mouth.
I see this. Yeah. And I see it. And I mean, I'm looking down because we're up on that, you know, you're 5-6 feet above the water there. And I see this fish go, because I spooked him. I just walked down to see if there's anything eating it. And I spook it. This is like 11 o'clock in the morning, maybe even 10:30. And he goes bolting by. And it's this little fish. It's like a 16, 17 inch fish, little rainbow. And it's got the snake hanging out of its mouth. And I'm like, sweet. Someone finally got one and killed it and got it, right? And so Kyler was slow on that phone. So anyway, I go back to fish and it's 2 hours later because I went there at noon and there was nothing up. Went back at one, nothing still. I'm just starting. But I put that nymph on. And on the second cast, can you hear him talking?
I don't know. We'll see.
Kyler talks so loud. Sorry.
He's moving on.
Go in that room. Sorry. At any rate, this thing goes by and I see it. So I go back and I'm fishing. I throw on this nymph and I throw it out. And the nymphs, I think it was the first cast. And I can't really see from there. I'm down on the, not above it. And the glare is a little funky. I'm like, boom, get one. You know, I think it's the first or second cast. And it jumps and it's the snake eater.
No way.
And I've got it, right? And I'm like, holy shit. Well, I didn't catch it. I snagged the snake. I've got in the picture, if you look, you'll see my line goes down. And so I'm like, holy shit, holy shit. You know, there's no way this is happening. And I land it, right? And so I get it and I get to shore and you'll see the picture. It's this fish on shore. It's like, you know, I said, it's a 16, 17 inch rainbow. And I take the picture and the snake is 3 foot long, right? And so then I thought, well, shit. But I really wanted the picture. I should have left it in the fish, but I pulled it out.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm like messing around with it and I'm like, what the hell? And I start doing it. I'm like, ah, dang it. It's a mule deer dick. It is somebody, because we used to have, in hunting season, we let people stay, you know, we used to stay open during season. And we had a buck pull out there and they skinned it. And so you go, if you've never skinned a deer, you know, you go around the penis, around the backside of it, get that big chunk of fat that's with it, comes up, but it goes in and out of a sheath, right?
Right.
Their peckers do. And so this thing, when it's been in the water, who knows how long, but that fish ate the unit. And there is that much marble fat around this thing's pecker. And so down it goes, and it's hanging, and I pull it out, and I'm doing this, and I'm like, oh, God, it's a pecker. And I was like, so I just stood it up, put it out there, and it was, I believe it was 31 inches, because it's mostly skin, right? The belly skin is what they did it. But it had that hole, when you think there's a fly's too big, look at this picture, you'll see. But it ate that thing. I'm sure it saw it come. I can't imagine it thought it was a giant freaking midge nymph or whatever. But somehow it had got all, I mean, if I'd have left it in, it either would have killed it or it would have been 10 pounds next spring. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel bad that I took it out. But fish swam away. When you see the picture, I know it was, I mean, it just had to eat it as a snake. It had to.
Yeah, yeah.
But
for those keeping track, I think I might have missed one, but I counted 4 different euphemisms for penis. Penis, unit, dick, pecker. Was there one more?
I don't know, probably.
Johnson.
I was trying to keep it close, or PC, but...
we'll bleep all that out.
No, we won't. Who cares?
No, we won't.
We can drop F-bombs, but we can't say pecker. Are you kidding me?
Hey, I'll edit out a couple of those F-bombs. Maybe leave one in for fun.
We're doing that for people who don't like it, just so you know.
And sometimes we leave them in for the people that do.
Wow. There's a couple jokes. So I just thought of something else that after I sent the picture that you're going to see here in a second, or you already showed it. I don't know when you're going to put it in there, but
a couple times maybe
this of the pecker eater. And I send it back to my old manager, Rock Wilson, to give to this, and he gives it to this biologist, who's one of the shocker guys for, you know, he's a fish biologist back there for Michigan. And I immediately get another picture back. And the picture is 11-inch, I have that one too, but that one's on the computer. So you can get that one off. We've got it in the program, right?
Gotcha,
okay. So, but this one's an 11-inch brook trout that has a 35.5-inch snake hanging out its ass and its mouth at the same time. And they get them in the shot. And this river I used to fish all the time, it's called the Cedar, and there's about 100, so it's not giving anything away. But at any rate, it's got... I can't remember which way. The head's hanging out the fish, and the tail's hanging out the mouth, I mean, out the butt. And the tail's out the mouth. They eat him head first. And his caption was, "Not uncommon at all." I've never seen one in my life.
Yeah.
And now in a three-month window, I've got this shit happening all around me. It was like, are you kidding me? Right? So, but I mean, this one's really graphic, and the fish is fine. And the part hanging out his hind end is completely, it's just like a snake skin. It's decomposed, it's absorbed all
of it.
Yeah,
you got everything out of it, huh?
3-footer.
Jeez.
An 11-inch brook trout.
They're meat eaters.
That's enough. Check that and see if those guys are coming through on that.
Because if there's, I mean, I'll be able to cancel it out. It'll be.
How do you cancel the?
I do. That won't come through as a voice. It'll come through as.
Is just static.
I got a little echo, but it's not bad.
Okay.
If it's bad, we apologize. Sorry, we'll find something different, do something different next time. We'll see. I don't know.
Well, it's going to pick up no matter what.
But. Yeah.
So that's your snake.
That's our snake
that's
story.
That's your snake stories. There's been a lot of snake flies out there. A lot of people have done them. I've seen game changer snakes. I just don't think people will give it the shot. I mean, if you're going to do that, you're going to have to pay, you know, you're going to have to put more. We did it for like 2 days, I think, for a couple hours, and we didn't really.
You're going to pay your dues there.
Yeah, you're going to pay your dues, and it's going to be a really low percentage, I would guess, because you're talking surface. Well, even if you went under, where are they going to hit that thing?
Right.
Because they could hit it anywhere and hold on to it to kill it.
If you look at our percentages or whatever, our statistics from mousing, frogging, and then all the dudes who are throwing scorpions now, which, you know, Jake, Chuck, Kyler,
Nathan's
big on that one, Andrew. That's a Russ Madden fly, the scorpion. It's basically a floating streamer. It dives a tiny bit, but it's pretty topwater oriented. You can move fish on it. They're not eating it great. So yeah. I imagine it'd be
same
similar.
As and they blow it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, they blow it up. Frogging's the only one where I think they actually eat pretty well. But I bet your percentages are pretty low in terms of actual hookups from fish moved. And I don't know how many fish have moved.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Go to a place with a lot of snakes. Yeah. I bet some of that noise is coming through. All right. So let's jump into another question here. This is from N. Russell 11. I know we've done a couple of his questions so far. Also, I have a massive list of questions to get through, and we just can't cover that many each episode because we can talk. But if you have a really good question that hasn't been answered yet, ask it again. Bump it to the top of the list. And if it's great, we'll get into it. So this one's from N. Russell 11. He says, "I'm getting into waterfowl hunting partially as a way to source feathers for tying. Which duck species has the most underrated plumage for fly tying? Northern shoveler, pintail, etc."
You know, they don't really diversify much on the mallard or I mean the waterfowl because it's mangansers. Nobody shoots them. They've got some pretty cool barred stuff that I've used on stuff, but I've never used, I don't really know, because, I mean, I use a lot, everybody knows they use wood duck, which I don't, I use a little bit of wood duck. I use a ton of mallard, in particular flank, and if you haven't seen it, how to flank them, I did a video on it, so it's just right where the wing pocket is, and you get the straight feathers. The breast feathers are really not much good for what we do, but the bigger ones are. But gadwalls can be good. Never used a shoveler for anything that I know of, but I'd have to dig a little deeper. Common use is almost all mallard and wood duck. And then, like you said, some gadwall, but most of it's just tailing material, really, and wing sets for, you know, I'm sure I'm missing something for the, well, and bronze sets, obviously, for all your steelhead and your all that stuff, all bronze sets on your mallards, but mostly it's mallard, woody, and gadwall, I would say.
Groovy. Well, thanks for the question, and Russell. This is more of a comment. This just made me chuckle. I actually read this to you, I think, on our last trip, but it's Martin Allison 8719 says, I always look forward to the sliding pod. I'm an old vet with hearing aids that are Bluetooth enabled. That means I can not only enjoy listening to you guys, but simultaneously gain a legitimate excuse to tell the wife later on, sorry, honey, I didn't hear what you said. I was listening to Kelly. Kelly Gallup's marital assistance program. Who would have thunk it?
I read that.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
I usually have to apologize. I'm always, women are in the shop, wives are in the shop with their husbands, and somehow or another they'll come up that their husband's watching it, and I'm sorry.
I'm sorry you had to hear.
First of all, everybody hates their own voice, but oh, God. Yeah, I apologize a lot.
Yeah, my grandpa does the same thing. He'll be watching a Mariners baseball game or something, and you know, anything my grandmother says, in one ear, out the other, until it's dinner time.
Dinner time.
Then he's up. I don't know if it's his line, but I always remember hearing it as a kid, which I love. He said, call me anything you want, but except never call me late for dinner.
Yes.
Yeah, you heard that one before, huh?
Yes, it's a little old.
Yeah, I figured it wasn't his, but... all right, let's do another one. So this one comes from Dean Kruger 7178. Says, really digging the behind the desk segment. Let's take a look at that cougar picture plaque with a little backstory. Can't wait to check out the new Cortland rods. Thanks as always. P.S. My English teacher used to say the F word is part of our language, and it's only appropriate when it's used at the right time and circumstance.
Yeah, that's up to whose discretion?
Whose discretion, yeah. Yes.
What's he talking about, the cougar what?
Yeah, the cougar, the photo back here to the left.
Oh, this thing?
Yeah.
That was a...
So I'll get a close-up for that.
It's the Wasatch show I did. They were doing a blindfolded fly tying thing where they did a...
Real quick, so for those who are not watching, if you're just listening, it's a plaque. There's a photo of Kelly blindfolded, and then
there's two photos,
and then there's a cougar, a zoo cougar at the bottom, the real fly.
Yep. And they were doing this thing, and I was speaking there, and they were doing a. You had 15 minutes to tie a pheasant tail, I think. And I said, I don't want to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do a cougar. And so I did it, and Kip was with me, Webb, my neighbor. And I set you can set your stuff out in front of you, but you're blindfolded, right? So you set your stuff out. So it was pretty easy. You know, you set your tail, you set your body, you set this, you set that. But I set my razor blade because I did the head with a razor blade. Mm-hmm. And while I'm doing it, that piece of shit Kip starts moving my razor blade. And I said, I can hear it. And I go, don't move my blade, you dumbass. I got to have that. I got to find it. So
isn't there something about the Hippocratic Oath that a doctor takes?
Yeah, so I'm reaching around, and I tick it and find it and do get it. But then, because I got the whole fly, and the actual fly I tied. And then I went in and just bumped it with the blade and was done in 12 minutes. But I didn't win because... it wasn't a pheasant tail. I won the cougar division.
What was her name?
Which one? so, yeah, that's what that was.
The other one, which made me chuckle the other day, there's a guy in here who said he'd seen, we asked him if he'd ever fished between the lakes, and he goes, no, but I saw the video of that guy landing the giant fish up there.
Bob?
Kelly's got a photo right back
here.
Right,
she
came over and looked at it. If you guys haven't seen the video, go look up Bob Jacklin, Fish of a Lifetime. We have it on the shop computer like once a month. It's just so funny.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Bob is arguably one of the best anglers of all time. One of the best tires I've ever seen in my life. Just doesn't get, I mean, I don't know, people even know if he tie. I mean, he's got some great videos. He's one of those cats just understated. Never had a shop in here since the 60s, I think.
Yeah.
And and I helped him mount that fish. I mean, because he balked it, he got all kinds of shit for killing one fish out of the, it's a lake fish anyway. They come out of that lake to go up and feed, and they go right back into the lake. And he's killed, and he's been a taxidermist since 1940-something. And he's killed two fish in his life. It's like me. I've been a taxidermist since I was 19. And I still don't know if I killed the fish that I did for the World Championships. I'm not sure if I caught it or Jerry.
You can't remember?
No, I didn't care. It's a pissant little 7-pound steelhead. We fished all week. We caught an unbelievable, biggest run I've ever seen in the Platte River, Michigan. We caught like 120-some steelhead. Most of them are that, 25 to 28 range, that 20. And I was looking at one of the perfect fins, no scale deformation, nothing wrong with the fish, nothing that I have to fix, so when I get there, and just a nice, clean color fish, right? And so I carried my bags with me with salt and borax in them, and when I finally got one, I bonk it, and I'm like, okay, this is the fish I'm going to do for the Worlds. But I don't know if he caught it or I caught it. It makes no difference.
Right.
It's like at Steelhead Camp, John Klusing caught that giant brown. And then he gave it to me. He didn't want it. He didn't give a shit. And so this fall, we're fishing Steelhead anyway. But with Bob's fish, I helped him cast the head and do stuff like that. But he's caught, and for those who don't know about Bob, if anybody, look him up, because if you look in the second edition of Trout from Joe Brooks, there's a whole wet fly thing in there, and they're Bob's fly. And I always kept that around, and I never looked at who tied them. They're the best set of wet flies. I don't know if that book's here or not. They're the best set of wet flies I've ever seen in my life for the classics, and Bob tied them for Joe Brooks. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's
my
cool.
God.
Yeah.
But Bob and this whole, for those of you who don't know, the whole revolution of catch and release, if you go back in time, was very, very much driven by Lee Wolf and Bob Jacklin. So before all of us were out here spouting off what great humans we are for our catch and release. Virtue signalers of the world. These guys were the ones who taught you this, right? He kills one fish and people were giving him shit. I was like, anybody who did that can kiss my little fanny. I mean, it just really pisses me off. You don't know anything about the man, kept one fish in his life. And by the way, it's probably a 10-year-old male brown, which should have been dead 2 years ago.
Right.
If it wasn't a lake fish, it would have been. Mm-hmm. And it's like probably past, it wasn't going to be here that much longer. He took it home for like one every day or something. But damn, it was a beautiful. It is so good. I've got the cast of the head. I did 3 casts of that head so I can do a carving of it. Because I wanted to, I'm just going to do the same fish. I did a trace of his fish and then I'm going to do a carving of the fish just for me.
Well, we'll throw a photo of that in there. And I think that is a great place to end podcast number.
I got to have my thing behind the desk.
Oh, that was it.
No, I got to add to it.
We got to do another one? Wait, save it for next episode?
I don't know, man. This is pretty cool.
Okay, all right, do it. Let's see. Oh, we got to do band of the week, too.
I don't know. Jeez, we could
this chair's missing a wheel, and that's the third time I've almost fallen over backwards.
It doesn't fall over. It just almost feels like it's falling over.
Feels like it.
I could wait for next week, but I mean,
let's keep people. It's a cliffhanger.
It has to do with the UK and Howard being here last week, but it's pretty. It's new Wall of Fame stuff. So
I see it up there. Let's save it for next one. It's a good cliffhanger to keep people coming back. All right, band of the week. Who you got?
Jay Giles, Whammer Jammer.
I'm going Kris Kristofferson.
What song? Don't really care.
Just the Other Side of Nowhere.
There you go.
And Bobby McGee. All of them. Everything.
Everything.
They're all great.
Perfect.
What's the Silver Tongue Devil and I? Ooh, that's a good one.
He's wrote so many songs, it's unbelievable.
So many.
Yeah, that nobody knows. didn't have that great a voice for most people. So there's like,
I don't know. I dig it.
Bobby McGee, though, I was listening to him do a thing on the podcast, or no, maybe not podcast, I don't know, something on the radio I was listening to. And he was talking about when Janis got that song to sing. He goes, oh, that ought to be okay.
He made a couple bucks off that one?
Yeah, maybe 12.
Yeah, a couple, know,
13 maybe.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for watching, guys.
Appreciate it.
Subscribe, like, tell a friend, buy something. Anything else?
All that stuff, and I hope you liked it.
Yeah. Thanks for watching.